MODO.US.
Visit MODO.US for the best free play social casino experience wherever you are. Modo offers a huge selection of Vegas-style games with free spins, exciting promotions, and always generous jackpots. You can waste your time with the others, or you can win at Modo. Register today at MODO.US for your free welcome bonus.
Modo is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
MODO.US.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
Hi, everyone. It's me, Katie Couric. You know, if you've been following me on social media, you know I love to cook, or at least try, especially alongside some of my favorite chefs and foodies, like Benny Blanco, Jake Cohen, Lighty Hoik, Allison Roman, and Ina Garten. So I started a free newsletter called Good Taste to share recipes, tips, and kitchen must-haves. Just sign up at katiecouric.com/goodtaste. That's katiecouric.com/goodtaste. I promise your taste buds will be happy you did.
My name is Michael Wolff. Each week on Fire and Fury, the podcast, I take you deeper into the mind of Donald Trump and his campaign than any other journalist ever goes. I've written 3 books on Trump, but for some reason, the people around him, they keep on talking to me. To find out what they tell me, listen to Fire and Fury, the podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Ben Natafafri, host of the history show, The Last Archive, and I want to tell you about a new series we're running in our feed. It's called The Deadline. 6 essays written and read by Jill Lepore, the New Yorker writer, American historian, and founding host of our show. These are incredible essays on everything from the history of cryogenics to the Silicon Valley gospel of disruption. And at the end of each essay, I interview Jill about her craft as a writer. You can listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we continue here with Our American Stories. Grabbing a basket while grocery shopping may seem second nature today, but the idea was once groundbreaking, and that was far from the only thing that changed when Piggly Wiggly, the first modern American supermarket, opened over 100 years ago. On September 6, 1916, hundreds of curious shoppers came out for the opening of a new grocery store at 79 Jefferson Avenue in Memphis, Tennessee. And we broadcast here in Oxford, Mississippi. Memphis is only 1 hour practically due north. For weeks, they'd seen billboards and read newspaper ads about this grocery store with the funny name that promised an entirely new shopping experience, one that would, according to its owner, forever change the retail grocery business. Greg Hengler sat down with Mike Freeman near the location of that first Piggly Wiggly in downtown Memphis. Mike Freeman is the author of Clarence Saunders and the Founding of Piggly Wiggly, The Rise and Fall of a Memphis Maverick.
I took a job at a restaurant in downtown Memphis that happened to be at 79 Jefferson, and that was the first location of the Piggly Wiggly store. It was an interesting fact. You know, I became interested in that. My employer wanted me to do some research because he was curious as well, you know, what happened in the building and such. It's important to know what Saunders did differently was, in the old days, if you went into a store to shop, you couldn't just reach out and pick out your own groceries. You had the clerks do that for you. So you had to wait for them to, you tell the clerk what you want, and then they would bring it to you. And Saunders thought, well, this is really slow. This is so inefficient. And all this tied in with brand advertising. Before the turn of the century, you had all these brands we still recognize, Kellogg's cereal, Van Camp pork and beans. All these companies were selling their products in stores. And Saunders knew, well, you don't need a clerk to tell you what cereal you like. You like Kellogg's cereal? There it is. You get it yourself. The most important thing to him is I could sell more groceries, less cost, because I pay fewer people. Saunders grew up from a family that was poor. In fact, there's one story that a neighbor bought Clarence a pair of shoes. And then when Saunders had money later in life, he sent a check to that family for a number of years because they helped him out and he really needed it. So he knew what it was like to suffer here to live in hardship. And he carried that with him. You know, that probably motivated him as much as anything to do something. Saunders became a traveling salesman for a wholesale company. So he would call upon grocers. And Saunders developed a reputation for being a bit brash. He would go into a store and he would tell the store owner, says, you know, you would sell more vegetables if you displayed them this way, is the way you had it. And some thought, well, what does this guy know? Not everybody appreciated his advice. But it shows that he was already thinking about, you know, trying ways to do things a bit better than before. There was a man in Memphis who built a chain of stores, Mr. Bauer's stores. And they were small, like corner grocery stores, but every Bauer's store looked exactly the same as the signs in the front and the layout of the store where the groceries were placed. So each Bauer's store was identical. And that was an innovation, too. If you went from one store to the other, you'd know exactly where to find what you wanted to buy, because everything was in the same place, despite, you know, in different locations. And Saunders, he absorbed these ideas. That's the principle of chain store. Everything is alike, as much as it can be. So if you're comfortable with what they do, then you'll shop at chain store, no matter where that location was. So you could go into a town where you unfamiliar to you and find your favorite grocery, you know, whatever the business is, or Starbucks for that matter, and get exactly what you want. And that's the whole principle of chain store. Bauer's did that before Saunders. So he clearly learned from Bauer's how to manage a chain store business. The one thing that Bauer's did not do was arrange things customers to pick out themselves. So you still had clerks, and Saunders thought this was inefficient way of doing things. And he was kind of sarcastic. He says, you know, in a store is not very busy, the poor customer can't get the attention of a clerk because they're busy goofing off in the back room. He says that happens, or they're so busy, like during Christmas season, you know, everyone's shopping in the store so busy they can't handle the orders properly. The arrangement of the store Bowers and the older merchants had was, as you walked up to a counter, and once you had your clerk's attention, you would rattle off what you wanted, and then he would go about the rest of the store, picking out the items you wanted and bring them to the front, and then you would transact business, then off you go. And Saunders thought, well, you know, they don't need a clerk to tell them that Campbell's soup is good, or we just put it on a shelf, they can find it themselves. He took this journey to Terre Haute, Indiana, to look at a store that he was told was unique and designs differently. And he came back a bit disappointed. It wasn't really anything special at all. And Saunders told the story often. He said on the way back, he saw this mother pig at a farm, and he saw all these piglets trying to feed off the mother pig, and it reminded him of customers trying to attract attention of a clerk. And then the idea popped in his head. He had the name Piggly Wiggly just from seeing this pig. Okay, that's the name. And then he went about designing, well, how are we going to actually do this? We'd have to practically rebuild the interior of a store to change its self-service. Piggly Wiggly, you know, that was his name. And it was a very unusual name. I mean, I think it was perfect for what he was trying to do because he was being different. And then he would He began writing advertisements where Piggly Wiggly became a character. Piggly Wiggly goes to town. You know, Piggly Wiggly does this. And so, you know, that's how he built his brand identity. He made a story out of an imaginary pig that went shopping. I'll read part of one. It's Piggly Wiggly. Ain't that a funny name? The fellow that got up that name must have a screw loose somewheres. All this may be so, but the Piggly Wiggly knows its own business best, and its business will be this: to have no store clerks gab and smirk while folks are standing around 10 deep get waited on. Every customer will be her own clerk, so if she wants to talk to a can of tomatoes and kill her time, all right and well. This seems likely this will be a mighty lonesome chat. Saunders addressed customer fears. You know, it used to be, if you went in certain stores in the old days, and, you know, the clerk might put his thumb on the scale so you'd pay extra for tomatoes or potatoes or whatever, or they'd sell you food that was out of date. And Saunders thought all that was just wrong. It was just not good business. And you could sell more groceries just by being honest. And he was very proud. He talked a lot about labeling prices on everything. So if you walk in, or you go to the canned soup aisle, you know exactly what the price of that soup is. And it didn't matter what store you're in, one of his stores, they all price things about the same. And it didn't matter who you were or whether the clerk knew you or not. We got the same prize.
When we come back, more of Mike Freeman telling the story of Clarence Saunders, the founder of Piggly Wiggly, here on Our American Stories.
MODO.US for the best free play social casino experience wherever you are. Modo offers a huge selection of Vegas-style games with free spins, exciting promotions, and always generous jackpots. You can waste your time with the others, or you can win at Modo. Register today at MODO.US for your free welcome bonus.
Modo is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
MODO.US.
I'm Ben Natifafri, host of the history podcast, The Last Archive, and I want to tell you about a new series we're running in our feed. It's called The Deadline, and it features six essays written and read by Jill Lepore, the New Yorker writer, American historian, and founding host of our show. These are incredible essays on everything from the history of cryogenics to the Silicon Valley gospel of disruption. And at the end of each essay, I interview Jill about her craft as a writer and how she's thinking about the themes of these essays now. We talk Frankenstein. We talk writing leads. We talk Barbie. We talk Doctor Who.
This is a crazy origin story. I don't think I've ever told this before.
I really loved having these conversations with Jill, and it was a rare chance to talk to her about how she goes about reading, writing, and the work of history. You can listen to The Deadline on The Last Archive feed on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, everyone. It's me, Katie Couric. If you follow me on social media, you know I love to cook, or at least try, especially alongside some of my favorite chefs and foodies like Benny Blanco, Jake Cohen, Lydie Hoyt, Allison Roman, and of course, Ina Garten and Martha Stewart. So I started a free newsletter called Good Taste that comes out every Thursday, and it's serving up recipes that will make your mouth water. Think a candied bacon Bloody Mary, tacos with cabbage slaw, curry cauliflower with almonds and mint, and cherry slab pie with vanilla ice cream to top it all off. I mean, yum, I'm getting hungry. But if you're not sold yet, we also have kitchen tips like a foolproof way to grill the perfect burger and must-have products like the best cast iron skillet to feel like a chef in your own kitchen. All you need to do is sign up at katiecouric.com/goodtaste. That's KATIECOURIC.com/goodtaste. I promise your taste buds will be happy you did.
I'm Jacob Goldstein. I used to host a show called Planet Money. Now I'm starting a new show. It's called What's Your Problem? Every week on What's Your Problem? Entrepreneurs and engineers describe the future they're going to build once they solve a few problems. How do you build a drone delivery business from scratch?
Our customers, they want us to do this unbelievably reliably in the storms, no matter what, and hundreds of times a day.
How do you turn a wild dream about a new kind of biology into a $10 billion company?
We didn't have a particular technology. We didn't have a way of making money. It was a great way to start a company. I highly recommend
What could go wrong? How do you sell millions of dollars worth of dog ramps for wiener dogs in the middle of a pandemic?
We're working with 400 influencers, and the majority of them are actually not a person, but it's actually a dog.
I can tell you right now, the dog ramp guy has some very interesting problems. Listen to What's Your Problem on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My name is Michael Wolff, and I'm the host of Fire and Fury, the podcast. Not too long ago, I saw Donald Trump, and he shouted, "Hey, Michael, I made you rich." And the truth is, my three books about Trump, they have sold a lot of copies. It all started 8 years ago. I found myself in Donald Trump's Beverly Hills home sharing Haagen-Dazs ice cream with him. I asked him, why was he running for president? And he answered, without missing a beat, because I want to be the most famous man in the world. Since then, I've become a go-to person when Trump and those around him want to talk. And now, every week, I'm going to share those insider stories with you. Listen to Fire and Fury, the podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we continue with Our American Stories and with author Mike Freeman telling the story of Piggly Wiggly and its founder, Clarence Saunders. Let's continue with Mike.
He knew he was taking a less profit. He probably had people in the grocery business say, "We can't make any money. You're not selling high enough. You're not making enough profit." But he was thinking of volume. You know, and he could open the more stores you open, the more volume you have. You know, one of the benefits of self-service is you are selling more goods per day. And that helps eliminate the problem of spoiled food or expired food. And Saunders was aware of that. And he would advertise to people, say, "This is what I'm doing. I'm going to treat you fair." I mean, now you can't imagine going in a store and not having a label on it. So this is 32 cents or whatever. Can't imagine it. But for, you know, the 20th century, that was commonplace. And when, once you label everything, then no grocery store can hide. You know, his competitors are thinking, you know, we're going to have to do something different. You know, he proved right there that first year that he had about 8 or 9 stores in Memphis and Bowers had over 40. And he outsold the Bowers stores simply because he made it easier for people to shop. And they just started swarming into the Piggly Wigglies. You know, he's one of those rare individuals that has an idea that worked and that transformed part of our society. You know, I don't say he's as great as Henry Ford, but, you know, Ford decided, why can't we put an engine in this little carriage and then hook it up to some wheels and then we don't need a horse and buggy anymore. We have a car. Changed the world. Now, Saunders isn't of that level of success, but I think he had the same mind where he thought, well, let's do something a little different here. You know, the old ways are, we can do a little faster, a little bit better than that. And then that's what Piggly Wiggly was. Grocery store's version of a Model T. What's interesting is the next year, he started franchise. And he filed for several patents, you know, several patents. But he started selling the idea that, you guys down in Arkansas, Mississippi, you can build a Piggly Wiggly. Yeah, there's towns all over the South that were large enough to support a couple of grocery stores. And then that proceeded very rapidly, selling franchises all over the place. You could argue that the founder of Walmart did virtually the same thing. He put a Walmart in medium-sized towns. You know, if a town doesn't have a Walmart, it is kind of not a town. But having a store like that in your community, hiring the local folks to work in the store, probably manage the store, it built a loyalty for that brand that for Walmart still exists. The difference between Walden and Saunders is Walden never lost his business. He held on to him. Where I think Saunders had a lot of the same attitudes, same personality in some way. He wanted to be that champion, but in the end, he didn't keep that business long enough. You know, right now, most people don't know who Saunders is. Saunders achieved a level of celebrity and wealth that most people only dream of. He's most famous for the Pink Palace is a building. I don't know how many square feet it 36. Is. Well, they've added on to it, but a majority of that 36,000 square feet is what he built. It was to have a swimming pool and to have everything a rich person would walk. Saunders tried to outsmart traders of Wall Street, and to explain it simply, he didn't realize they wrote the rules of trade. There was no governing agency overseeing financial trade that we have now. It was whatever certain people, what we call Wall Street, decided to do is what was done. They made the rules among themselves. I have trouble sometimes describing a short sale. It's just a stock maneuver where different people in the financial business spread rumors that a company's in trouble, that the stock's not worth what it's listing at now. And Saunders thought that was horrible. I think the Wiggly had overexpanded, and there was a franchisor or two that had gone bankrupt. And that was all the trigger that these short sellers needed. And he started this campaign as take the shares out of the hands of these Wall Street thieves or wolves. And he started a buying campaign in Memphis, you know, save Piggly Wiggly from Memphis. Because most people in Memphis or, you know, any city outside of New York probably thought about Wall Street the same as he did. And it was sort of kind of a villainous place. And he was playing on that. You know, don't let these thieves take our Piggly Wiggly away from us. So everyone invested in Saunders' scheme to buy all the shares, hold them. But he pushed these traders into a panic because whatever they borrow, they have to pay. And if he's buying all the shares, they have to come to him to repay what they owe him. I mean, he was trying to trap them. And the board of directors of the stock exchange in New York kept Saunders from doing that. They let the traders off the hook. They could change the rules. See, there's no government agency overseeing stock trading. Whatever the board of directors thought was legal was illegal. And especially if they had friends who got caught up in this scheme and begging, you know, don't let us die out here. We'll let Saunders die. You know, they don't know him. They don't care about him. He's not part of their social group or anything like that at all. He's just some hillbilly from Tennessee who thought he knew what he was doing. They just, you know, interpreted rules to let him die. Though he had borrowed all that money instead of gaining what he thought would be hundreds of millions of dollars, he had nothing. You know, 12 million is a lot of money today to lose. Imagine what it was like in 1923. What Saunders had done, and there were people that really liked him because he was, you know, become very famous, was that he had begged Memphians to pool together money, pay off this debt, so things would get back to normal operating under his leadership. And people did. They had rallies or Save Piggly Wiggly from Memphis. That was the campaign. Not for Saunders. He was careful to say Save Piggly Wiggly from Memphis. And he had a point there, too. I mean, you know, there's a lot of jobs in Memphis now because of this store, this business. And then he made the dumb mistake of putting money into this, what we now know as the Pink Palace, which was an extravagant home. This is, you know, and people that invested in Piggly Wiggly must have been shocked. Says, what in the world are you doing? We're taking time away from our business, spending our money, bail you out, and you're building this stupid house. Man, you don't have time for that anymore.
How did they find out about it?
Well, a workman had been injured, and the newspaper published a story.
You know, holy cow, you know, they couldn't believe it. I mean, this is a terrible mistake he made. And then costing, well, I mean, he tried again to make money, and he did, but, I mean, he's still famous for what? Tiggy Wiggly. And he lost, he only ran this company for 6 years. I guess that the story is remarkable in itself, was that we started with one store. 6 years later, he had 1,000. I mean, you know, he had a substantial chain, but, I mean, he was successful. He did build something that was unique. He just didn't hold on to it. I mean, he would be Sam Walton today, or his memory would be as big as Sam Walton if he had just held on to Piggly Wiggly like Walton held on to Walmart. The most fitting memorial to him is the ordinary self-service store. Sam Walton founded Walmart in 1962. By the end of his life in 1992, Walton owned the largest retail merchandising company in the world. In his autobiography, Sam Walton Made in America, he credited the enormous success of his retail stores to the principle of self-service. His brief description of the benefits that self-service gave to him and his desire to pass on the savings to his customers seemed to be a near match to Saunders' own words two generations before. During the past 25 years, supermarkets and large merchandise stores have become popular in nearly every country in Europe, Asia, Latin America, and parts of Africa. In an odd way, Clarence Saunders' prophetic slogan for Piggly Wiggly all over the world has come true.
And great job on the piece, as always, by Greg Hengler. And a special thanks to Mike Freeman, who wrote the book Clarence Saunders and the Founding of Piggly Wiggly. And what a story. And that he started the idea of pricing and transparency and volume so that we could lower profits on each individual item, but make up for that with volume. And that is indeed what Sam Walton did. There's no doubt that Sam took a lot of the ideas of Piggly Wiggly and scaled them to a much larger operation. The story of Piggly Wiggly, the story of Clarence Saunders, here on Our American Story.